Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Hello and welcome to the June 11th, 2017 edition of the program. For my Jewish listeners, it's also the 15th of Sivan 5777. And for those who are affected by the phases of the moon, look out, it's full moon this weekend. But seriously, sometimes I think that not only the waters of the oceans are moved by the effect of the moon, but that the logic of world politics waxes and wanes like the moon. Take, for instance, the announcement by U.S. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer, who, when asked about the U.S. embassy move to Jerusalem, said, "The question is not if that move happens, but only when." President Trump made this decision, he said, to maximize the chances of successfully negotiating a deal between Israel and the Palestinians, fulfilling his solemn obligation to defend America's national interests. Let me deal with the last point first. How come that President Trump suddenly cares what the world thinks of his actions? His withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement caused condemnation from some countries, but did he change his mind? Did it matter to him? No. Trump, who boasts of defeating the forces of evil, is suddenly afraid of possible terrorist security threats. That doesn't make sense. And as to his dream to hold off the embassy move so as not to upset his newfound Arab friends until he has successfully negotiated a deal between Israel and the Palestinians, pie in the sky. By the way, how about this piece of irony? Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said, "As someone who believes that Jerusalem is the undivided capital of Israel, I am deeply disappointed in President Trump's decision." Why did he not speak out during the presidency of Obama? Politics is a strange game. Take, for instance, the conflicting statements of President Trump and his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, who asked the Saudis to ease the blockade of Qatar, while Trump rebukes them for being the funders of international terrorism. More of this later in the program. Also today, an assessment of the British general election, as well as the misplaced pride of Tel Aviv for being the world's largest LGBT capital. And I'll tell you who's in town to celebrate 50 years of our eternal united capital city of Jerusalem.
Howdy from the heartland. This is David Hartley-Free. Would you like to know what it's like to live in the wild West Bank? No, that is a mistake. This is the heartland of Israel, Judea, and Samaria. Israel is under attack in social media, on the campuses, in newspapers. They are spreading lies and false information about Israel. Join me every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Israel time for my show, A Hebrew in the Heartland, and I am going to provide you tools that you can use to defend Israel, to protect this holy nation.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Last week, we heard Ambassador John Bolton, who has the ear of Trump. For listeners who missed that, I'm repeating here some relevant sentences, although the whole program is, of course, still available on our archives.
The notion of the two-state solution has failed. We've been pursuing this for over 70 years in one form or another. We saw it at the beginning of the UN's consideration of how to end the Palestinian mandate in Resolution 181 to partition what was left of the mandate and create a special international regime for the city of Jerusalem. Let's not forget that bad idea in the middle of a lot of other bad ideas. And Resolution 181 was rejected by the Arabs and the Arab states, following which we had the war. But honestly, even after Resolution 181 had been rejected, the world has continued to pursue some version of the two-state answer without success. Despite the fact that many people of goodwill have tried to implement it, it hasn't worked for a variety of reasons, and it's not working during the era of radical Islam. Some people don't want to see any Jewish state, period. Some won't accept conditions that will permit a Jewish state, however bounded, to be allowed to live in peace and security. And some still demand concessions no Israeli government will ever accept, such as the partition of Jerusalem to provide a capital for the new Palestinian state. In my view, the final failure of the two-state solution was reflected this past December in Resolution 2334 adopted by the Security Council. It talks about Palestinian territories occupied since 1967, including East Jerusalem. It says Israeli settlements are a flagrant violation under international law with no legal validity. I'm just getting started. This resolution is a long catalog of everything that's wrong. The whole idea that you can legalize this dispute and somehow take things that were purely ephemeral when they were created and turn them into international boundaries. When the 1949 armistice was undertaken, the agreements that were signed were purely for the purpose of the ceasefire. The armistice demarcation line is not to be construed in any sense as a political or territorial boundary. So I come to the conclusion that the two-state solution, however well-motivated, with whatever goodwill people have advocated it, simply will not work. It won't work because of these circumstances. It won't work because there's no Palestinian entity that can make the agreements necessary for the two states to come into existence and comply with them later. There's nobody who would seriously advocate dealing with Hamas. So they're out of the picture. And the Palestinian Authority is a corrupt, powerless authority that has no democratic legitimacy and is not likely to acquire it. The fact is that political institutions through much of North Africa and the Middle East are disintegrating, collapsing, fragmenting before our eyes. Libya has dissolved as an effective state. Boko Haram has ripped Nigeria along the seam of Saharan and sub-Saharan Africa. Somalia has not had an effective government in 25 years. Yemen is hopelessly broken. Syria and Iraq have ceased to exist as functioning states. And people are proposing to create a new state, one that's not even territorially contiguous. Have they looked around recently at the region? There's every reason not to add to the instability by creating a new non-viable state.
So the when, not if, mentioned by Spicer, looks a long way off. Unless Trump takes the bull by the horns and fulfills his election promise in December, when the waiver he just signed expires. Maybe by that time he will have realized that even he is only human and cannot make a deal with someone who is not interested to compromise and whose terms and conditions are too unreasonable. I know that it would be a blow to his ego, but he will eventually have to swallow it. Only this week, the Fatah movement, headed by Mahmoud Abbas, who is also the leader of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO, and the Palestinian Authority, and with whom the negotiations would have to be conducted, I repeat, only this week, he reiterated its commitment to continue the violent struggle against Israel as a means to realize all Palestinian rights. In a statement issued on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the 1967 Six-Day War, Fatah emphasized that natural history rights are not annulled by antiquation, and added that the removal of the occupation from the Palestinian and Arab lands will be a certainty. The statement that the establishment of an independent Palestinian state within the June 4, 1967 borders with Eastern Jerusalem as its capital is, he said, the only way to achieve peace, stability and security in the Middle East. Fatah also blasted settlements in its statement, referring to them as war crime based on racist and terrorist ideology, while stressing that the Palestinian people are armed with revolutionary willpower and can follow the path of a violent struggle to realize their rights. It called on the occupation state to learn a lesson from the revolutions of the Palestinian people, the intifadas, and the struggles it has waged, saying those battles will not cease until the Israeli army and the settlers leave the region and comply with international law. This statement is just the latest example of the incitement by Fatah, which President Trump claims is a peace partner for Israel. While Abbas tells the West in English that he is against violence and terrorism, his television channels and social media pages belonging to Fatah openly call for terrorism against Israelis. The Palestinian Authority, headed by Mahmoud Abbas, has for years named schools, public squares, and community centers after terrorists who murdered Israeli citizens, and the world not only ignored it, but funded their activities. Memory, the Middle East Media Research Institute, and in particular PMW, the Palestinian Media Watch, have consistently drawn attention to the PA's incitement to violence. Their work has been studied in the highest echelons of the United Nations, but until now with little effect. And the Palestinian Authority seems to have been encouraged by that silence. Perhaps now, prompted by economic constraints, Norway, followed by Denmark, both regular contributors to the Palestinian Authority, have now realized that their many millions of dollars have not been used for the purpose for which they were intended, to improve the living standard of the Palestinian population in Judea and Samaria, but for incitement to violence and terrorism. Norway has asked for their money back, and Denmark has frozen some $8 million that were to go to a number of Palestinian and pro-Palestinian NGOs. Denmark's ambassador to Israel has let it be known that his country's foreign ministry demanded that the $500,000 already paid to the WATC, the Women's Affairs Technical Committee, a Palestinian NGO, be returned because it funded a youth center named after Dalal Mughrabi, the notorious terrorist who in 1978 killed 35 people in Tel Aviv. The UN has also withdrawn funding from those NGOs. The wheels at the UN turn fast when it concerns vilification of Israel, but it takes years of hard work by Israel's guardians of justice, as well as by our government, to rectify and reverse the unjustified support by international agencies for incitement and terror against the Jewish state. It's the old saying, if you throw mud, it sticks. According to a BBC report, London Muslim Mayor Sadiq Khan dismissed criticism from the US President Donald Trump over his response to Saturday's terror attack in London. Trump accused Khan of downplaying the attack by telling Londoners there was no reason to be alarmed. Of course, I cannot agree with Mayor Khan. To make such an unguarded statement so soon after the horrific Islamic terror attack, while large areas of South London are still cordoned off during active investigations, and apartments amid residential areas are suspected of being terrorist hideouts. So, while Londoners are resilient, and in such situations always display the spirit of the Blitz, the strategic bombing campaign conducted by the Germans against London during 1940 and 41, targeting populated areas, Mayor Khan's statement was insensitive and out of place. On the other hand, President Trump acted totally irresponsibly to comment on the actions and pronouncements of the mayor of the United Kingdom's capital city. It's none of his business. So, just as Khan's accusation of Trump as being ignorant about Islam and making both the US and UK less safe was uncalled for in his official capacity as mayor. These men would do better to concentrate on the important issues in their respective domains rather than to squabble about irrelevances. And domestically, the transparency in government is all well and good. But in the current U.S. administration, there is a hint of McCarthyism, a kind of witch hunt, where everything must be out in the open and special committees grill responsible officials to the point of trying to make them disclose classified information. It's not initiated by the White House or even the Pentagon, but by elements of the opposition in Democratic Party circles. What's going on is in the course of and for the purpose of embarrassing the president with the aim of obstructing and making it difficult for him to govern. Keep it here or after the break.
Jew haters, beware. Political hitman is here. Who's in my crosshairs? Who's in my hot seat? I'm Howie Silberger. Join me Sundays at noon Eastern, 7 Israeli, and Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 9 Israeli, for a political hitman, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Welcome back. What's going on is in the course of and for the purpose of embarrassing the president with the aim of making it difficult for him to govern. However, in many cases, President Trump brings it upon himself. Take the current squabble between him and the Attorney General Jeff Sessions that has been festering ever since Trump appointed him, and he soon after, to Trump's great annoyance, recused himself from the federal investigation of ties between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. And now again it has come to a head over President Trump's unilateral appointment of former Assistant Attorney General Chris Wray to serve as the next director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, despite the fact that he has charged Attorney General Sessions with interviewing prospective candidates and reporting back to him with suggestions. Trump also blamed the Department of Justice for watering down his travel ban. As a result, Sessions informally offered to resign, but we are not certain of the president's response. One thing is certain. In the meantime, he seems to have hung out Jeff Sessions to dry. My conclusion? Yes, the American people are entitled to know in broad brushstrokes what's going on in the administration, what their government has in store for them. But by showing publicly the weakness in the system, they are playing into the hands of their enemies who will surely exploit them. Loose lips sink ships also applies in such matters. But I have often before said there is an inherent naivety in the American character that has not yet caught up with a fast-moving world. One of the most refreshing political figures that have emerged in recent years is Nikki Haley, the United States Ambassador to the United Nations. Nikki Haley is on a 3-day official visit to Israel. She says it as it is, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and does not look over her shoulder what her political opponents think. Since she and the Israeli ambassador to the UN, Danny Danon, are occupying their respective chairs, there is a discernible change in the attitude of the UN toward Israel. This week, about 200 leaders of the evangelical Christian communities from all over the world, in fact some 60 countries, have come to Israel to celebrate 50 years since the unification of our holy city of Jerusalem. It is organized by the Knesset Christian Allies Caucus, comprised of members from 7 different parties, that seeks to build a direct line of communication, cooperation, and coordination with Christian communities from around the world. They were received by Israel's President Reuven Rivlin at his residence. And there, speaking for the group, was European Member of Parliament from Sweden, Lars Adaktsson, who, after thanking the president for hosting them at his residence, began by referring to the Swedish government's belligerent attitude toward Israel. Because his words were impressive, I bring you a large part of what he said.
I want to commend you, Mr. President, for taking the bold step to invite a Swedish politician to take the floor in your own residence. Today, June 6, is the Swedish National Day. And while I can't take part in the celebrations back in Stockholm, hopefully I can fulfill my patriotic duty by trying to improve the image of Sweden in a country where there indeed is a need for it. Regrettably, my country, Sweden, is a country where anti-Israeli sentiments are all too common, and with an official policy toward Israel which leaves room for improvement, to express it in a diplomatic way. This is sad, and it needs to be changed as soon as possible. And Mr. President, I can assure you we are working on it. At the same time, hostility against Israel is not isolated to just one country. My firm belief is that those of us who value the friendship between Jews and Christians have a duty to address the roots of the anti-Israeli bias wherever it occurs. One of these roots, perhaps the most prominent one, is decades of unbalanced reporting by news media. For me, it's obvious that the European public for a long time has been living with the impression of Israel as the source of all problems, while the Palestinians have been represented by trustworthy, peace-loving political leaders without any responsibility for violence or terror. Israel is, as we all know, a society with freedom of speech, pluralism and rule of law, but of course also a country with its challenges and problems. You only need to take a short glimpse at the political debate in the house that this group just recently visited, the Knesset, to realize that opinions differ on desirable solutions for the future of Israel. That is actually the core of a democracy. This is all too often ignored, I would say, in the European context. Ignored in the same way as the fact that Israel is surrounded by more or less brutal dictatorships with almost half a billion inhabitants and militant Islamism that openly threats to extinguish the state of Israel. Flaws in the Israeli democracy are portrayed as a more serious problem than the brutal oppression and terror in the dictatorships of this region. Too many political representatives, as well as media, like to focus on occupation and settlements, while ignoring formative events and development in this great country. As news consumers, we rarely meet the real Israel, the diverse country with successful companies and entrepreneurs, with world-class research and innovation, and with the knowledgeable, caring and engaged citizens. As friends of Israel, the task is ours to provide the full picture of Israeli society to our compatriots. This is a challenge, but by no means an impossible task. Ahead of us is the celebration of the reunification of the capital of Israel, Jerusalem. This fall, there is the 70th anniversary of the United Nations partition plan that recognized the right of the Jewish people to have a state of their own, and the next year, the state of Israel turns 70. Let us, my friends, promise each other that we shall use these occasions to celebrate the only democracy of the Middle East. We shall contribute to increased knowledge and understanding of the real Israel, and we shall strengthen the bonds between our countries and Israel. Dear friends, I remember reading about a question posed in the 19th century to the British Queen Victoria, and the question was asked to Prime Minister Benjamin Disraeli. Mr. Prime Minister, what evidence can you give me of the existence of God? After a few moments of reflection, the Prime Minister answered, "The Jews, Your Majesty." For the Israeli, it was clear that the survival of this people was a miracle of God. If the Israeli would be standing here today, looking back on the 20th century and what it brought to the Jewish people, I think he would have made the same statement with an even stronger emphasis. Upon seeing this beautiful country, perhaps he would have quoted Ezekiel. This is what the sovereign Jehovah says: I will resettle your towns, and the ruins will be rebuilt. The desolate land will be cultivated instead of lying desolate in the sight of all who pass through. They will say, this land that was laid waste has become like the Garden of Eden. The cities that were lying in ruins, desolate and destroyed, are now fortified and inhabited. These were the prophetic words inspired by God, our God, as Christians and Jews. Judeo-Christian is also the correct term for one of the most defining aspects of Western civilization. It reminds us that many of the challenges of today that we face as Israelis, as Europeans, as citizens of other parts of the free world are common challenges. The relationship between us as Christians and Jews has come a long way. In fact, it is a covenant friendship that goes far beyond relationship. In the words of Pope Francis, Judaism is the big brother of Christianity. So, as we are gathered here for the first Jerusalem prayer breakfast, let us not be strangers. Let us enjoy each other's company as brothers and sisters, and let us pray together for peace, for reconciliation and liberty as brothers and sisters. Thank you so much.
President Reuven Rivlin then addressed his guests.
Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May all they who love thee prosper. Yes, I'm a Jerusalemite, son of Jerusalemite, son of the son of Jerusalemite. Goes back to the year 1809, not because it was the year 1809, but because the year 1809, according to the Jewish calendar, and we are counting our calendar in letters in Hebrew, and every letter has a meaning in numbers. And the year 1809 was the year 5000, Taf, Kuf, Ayin, three letters that make sense in one word. One word in Hebrew, Ka. And Ka, the translation is sound, blow. Sound the great horn to proclaim freedom.
More from the president in a moment.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa. Each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Addressing the Christian leaders from all over the world, the president continued,
sound the great horn to proclaim freedom. And my grandfather was living as a great rabbi in Vilna. And my grandfather said in the year 1809, we have to go to Jerusalem because the Messiah is going to arrive. And there is no way that the Rivlin family will not welcome him in Jerusalem. And since then we are here. Unfortunately, he decided to postpone his coming. And we are praying also for peace in Jerusalem. We are asking our friends and our neighbors and our opponents and our enemies to understand the Jewish people have returned back to the homeland. This is a fact. It is very special to welcome you here in Israel, in our capital city, Jerusalem. We are celebrating 50 years of United Jerusalem. I remember that call in the radio all over. Har Habayit Biyadeinu. The Temple Mount is in our hand. I can never forget this, ever. We felt at the time the history and the future of Israel, of the Jewish people at all, rested on our shoulders. And here I am today. I have the right to be free in my city, Jerusalem. Jerusalem today is a city of knowledge and education. Jerusalem is the seat of the government, of the president of Israel, and the city of culture and innovation. Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, is diverse. The city of Jerusalem, which was once a divided city, is the same city where Jews and Arabs, religious and secular people, find the peace to live together, to meet, to get to know each other, to build shared Jerusalem all together. Jerusalem, for me, my dear friends, is a microcosm of our ability to live together, Jews, Muslims, and Christians. Jerusalem is holy to every faith. We have one God. Everyone worship God according to his beliefs and tradition. And Israel is proud to stand by the right of everyone to worship God as they believe. But even after 50 years, we have not let Jerusalem rest. Someone to divide her. Someone to see her grow. Someone to see her shrink. And there are some who want to deny altogether its history, our history. Perhaps today, as we mark half of a century since the city was reunited, the time has come to bring peace to Jerusalem. And I had the honor to welcome only 2 weeks ago in Jerusalem, here, on this very stage and in these very rooms, to welcome President Trump here in Jerusalem. I told him that it is not enough to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. We must also pray for peace in Jerusalem. All of us, Muslims, Jews, and Christians. That is what you are all doing, actually. You are here to show your support for Israel, your love for Jerusalem, and your friendship with the Jewish people. We appreciate this very much, and we thank you from the bottom of our heart. Thank you, our friend, and God bless all of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Having spoken to a great number of participants, it is evident that their love and support for Israel is wholehearted and sincere, and that in their own countries, they counter the bias and spread the message of truth. Their celebrations and meetings continue for another 2 days, and we wish them a safe journey home. 7 weeks ago, British Prime Minister Theresa May, leader of the Conservative Party, announced that she will hold a snap election on June the 8th, 3 years before her term expired. Her reasons were that she was not satisfied with her overall majority of 6 seats and wanted the people to give her a much larger and stronger mandate to be free to negotiate Britain's total exit from the European Union, known as hard Brexit, so that she can form trade agreements with other parts of the world. 650 members make up the House of Commons, the lower house of Parliament, and during the early period leading up to the voting date last Thursday, it looked as if she was on her way to get possibly a 200-seat majority. But during the campaign, mainly directed against her principal opposition, the Labour Party led by Jeremy Corbyn, Theresa May displayed an air of overconfidence that bordered on arrogance, and the British people did not like that. Instead of being content with her 6-seat majority, she wanted to emulate former Conservative Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, and in the process scored an own goal and lost heavily. Although her Conservatives are still the largest party, they have lost their overall majority, and the election result was a hung parliament, that no party had an overall majority. Now we already hear calls for her resignation, even from within her own party. The Queen charged Theresa May with forming a government, as is her prerogative. May will have difficulty in finding a coalition partner with enough seats to support her and to outnumber the rest. It is now thought that she will approach the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party, based in Northern Ireland. But such support comes only at a price, and that may be high. For instance, demands for senior government positions. If May would be unable to form a government within the allowed time, then the Queen may choose to offer that task to Jeremy Corbyn and his Labour Party, who do not take as tough a stance in the forthcoming Brexit negotiations as Theresa May has promised. So how does all that affect Britain's policy toward Israel? Theresa May already has a track record in line with European policy to support the Palestinian Arabs achieve a sovereign state by trying to force Israel to make impossible concessions. So there would be no change. Jeremy Corbyn, on the other hand, is known for his anti-Israel pronouncements and declared friendship with Hamas and Hezbollah, which would have consequences for the whole Middle East. So let us hope that the premiership will remain in the hands of the Conservatives and Theresa May. And finally, would you want your small child to see a procession of half-naked or provocatively dressed men and women frolicking frivolously through your city centre? If not, then you did well to have stayed away from Tel Aviv today, Friday. The annual marches of the LGBT, the lesbian, homosexual, bisexual and transgender crowd through the world's cities has grown into unprecedented proportions of brash brazenness. People of all stripes, whether black or white, believers in whatever religion or secular, as well as the sexually deviant from the norm, have a right to practice their preferences so long as it is within the law and does not inconvenience or embarrass the rest of the population. To flout their sexuality publicly, particularly in the way of these marches, as if it were an asset to society, is abhorrent to the majority of the population. What is it that they want to prove? Their right to be as they are and not be harassed by a few fanatical nutcases? I say to them, if you go about your life like the rest of us and don't deliberately draw attention to your sexual lifestyle, then no one will care what you do in private. It is interesting that the LGBT crowd, a relatively small number compared with the total population, make more noise than the rest of us together. And there is one other significant point. It is generally accepted that most of, particularly the Tel Aviv LGBT community, as they like to call themselves, are politically left-wing, or by definition leaning that way. They advocate and demonstrate for Palestinian Arab rights, yet the very people whom they profess to defend do not, as we do, accept them, but would physically attack them were they to dare and march through or demonstrate in Arab areas. An irony, if ever there was one. And here is my thought for the week. Dress as you want to be addressed. Before we come to the end, I want to apologize to all the listeners who during the past month have written to me and found that the mail bounced back. There is, in fact, a permanent fault with the old address. So please delete it from your records and substitute walter.israelnationalradio@gmail.com. That's walter.israelnationalradio@gmail.com. And now I look forward to again receiving your mail, and as you know, I always personally reply. I am happy to be able to say that I am not aware of having any enemies. Political opponents, of course. But we conduct our dialogue in a civilized manner, unlike some of our supposed role models in the Knesset. But that's a subject for another day. The inanimate phenomenon that could be described as my enemy and that gives me the most problem is time, the relentless progress of the one thing I cannot arrest, and it has shown its power once again. My time is up. So until next week, God willing, when I shall bring you more news, views, and interviews from the Jewish world and beyond, this is Walter Bingham, wishing you a good and safe week. Thank God the lifespan is increasing, but that means an ever-increasing number of older members of our society needs to be cared for. So what you can do is visit your elderly neighbor. The beneficial effect is visible on their faces. Goodbye.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.